Did God have anything to do with the founding of America? On July 4th, 2026, the nation will celebrate the 250th birthday of the Declaration of Independence, our nation's birth certificate. Some secularists either downplay our history or, worse, only highlight the bad stuff. Historian Jane Hampton Cook is doing her part to help Americans rediscover our true history and how exciting it is. Jane Hampton Cook has worked in the White House and has also written books on American history for adults and children. Her website is janecook.com. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Jane, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for being with us.
Yes, it's great to be with you.
So here we are on the cusp of the 250th anniversary of America. Did God have anything to do with the founding of this nation?
Yes. When you look at the Declaration of Independence, the most famous clause is, you know, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That echoes to the book of Genesis. When God created male and female in his image, he created them. And the belief that God gave rights to man and to woman and not government is the key to the American Revolution and the founding of our nation. Because the people that were part of the founding generation had been taught that God had given them their king. And that was it. You know, there wasn't this idea of protecting your God-given rights. But the Declaration of Independence changed that. And it said, no. Man can't give you certain unalienable rights. God can. And that central clause in the Declaration of Independence has been used throughout the ages in our country with different groups claiming that promise for them. Women's voting rights, the leaders of that movement in the 1800s, they preferred and claimed that clause for women. John Adams used that clause, and he put it, when he wrote the Massachusetts Constitution, he put the equality clause into the Massachusetts Constitution. And that was the clause that a judge said made slavery illegal in Massachusetts, and they abolished it the last year of the American Revolution in Massachusetts. So it was just central. Everything flows from that. And so God was very much central in the founding of our nation.
That Massachusetts Constitution you're referring to, that John Adams, the chief author, it's my understanding Samuel Adams added just a little bit, by the way, Samuel Adams recruited his second cousin John to the American cause, so we can thank him for that.
That's right.
But that Constitution is, as I understand it, the world's oldest still operating Constitution. It was written in 1780. And that's very, very, very interesting. Now, it's interesting, too, to say, well, our rights come from the Creator. Michael Johnson, the current Speaker of the House of Representatives, I don't know if you know this, but he used to work with the Alliance Defending Freedom, which was founded by D. James Kennedy and Bill Bright and James Dobson and so forth for religious liberty when they saw that the gospel is starting to become illegal in some quarters. Anyway, so Michael Johnson, Speaker of the House, mentioned our God-given rights, and then some people in the pundit class, you know, excoriated for him, saying, how dare he say that our rights come from the government, not from God? What is he, a Christian nationalist?
Well, yeah, they're just wrong. They just have their information completely wrong. And, you know, something that I read a couple years ago, I listened on audiobook to Ben Franklin's autobiography that he wrote. And I also have looked at some of the liturgy that Franklin wrote. And I realized that Franklin rejected deism because he couldn't help but see God in creation, that he believed there had to have been an intelligent designer behind creation. It was just too perfect and too wonderful. And so Franklin was on the committee with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson to draft the Declaration of Independence. And I don't know for sure, but I can't help but think that by having the word creator in that clause, that was Ben Franklin's that he valued God as the creator, and that meant something to Ben Franklin. And so I think the founders, they they showed such respect for God in their language, and it seems formal to us today, but back then it was a way to show respect and to show the fear of God by respecting God, as is the word providence, where we've talked about how providence meant God's presence. And you have George Washington using the word providence more than 560 times in his writings. And we know that now because we can do a keyword search in on the National Archives, and we can see how many times he used that word, that term. And so, yes, it's very much to say that God-given rights aren't valid, or that's not what it was about. It's just an ignorant thing to say, frankly. And the thing is, too, though, we have to remember and respect our founders for this. They did not dictate a religion for America. They had enough confidence in what they believed to let it be free. And one of the things that really divided them at first in the Continental Congress was that they did come from different Christian denominations, and they didn't think they could hear a prayer even from someone else. And you hear Samuel Adams stand up and he says, "Well, I am not a bigot. I can hear the prayer from a man of piety and virtue who is also a friend to his country." And so they had to get over to think that they couldn't, that a Presbyterian couldn't hear a Church of England prayer seems very foreign to us, but they were so siloed within Christianity that it was an obstruction to them to even listen to the prayer of someone else who was not their, denomination. And they overcame that, and the founders gave us religious liberty. It's in the Bill of Rights. It's, the Church of England was arresting ministers in Virginia in 1774, the same year that the Continental Congress started meeting and debating this issue of bringing in a minister to talk to them. And so very much that our country was created and founded by people who at minimum had a high respect for God. And you see that in their writings. The irony for me is that we could get to the writings of the founder so much more quickly than we could 20 years ago. And yet people are so not lack of, they don't, they're, people don't know the true story. And like you said, you've got people in the news media who think that they know, and they don't, because they don't go bother to look up anything. And Speaker Johnson, I think, has done a really good job of expressing his faith and respecting others. And he's got a Bible in his office that's falling apart. And I heard him speak a few months ago. He talked about how that was a good sign. If you had a well-worn Bible, that means it had been used quite a bit. And I just think that, we're living in a time where we need to help people understand just that very basic concept that their rights, certain ones, come from God. And that's what our country was founded on.
What's so neat, though, too, is that everything you're saying can be verified. And as a TV producer, I've worked for years as a TV producer for D. James Kennedy. Mm-hmm. So let's take the example. You said a few moments ago that Samuel Adams said, "I'm no bigot. I can listen to a man who loves his God and loves his country," and so forth. Okay. The year is 1774. It's September 6th, the day before the first official opening of the first official Congress of the United States. And where are they? They're at Carpenter's Hall, which is in Philadelphia. They didn't go what we now call Independence Hall, which is close by. That was not an option for them because that was under the control of the British, who were controlling, major parts of Philadelphia. Well, the British were controlling major parts of all the different colonies. So these different representatives of the different colonies meeting there in Congress, yes, they decide to have prayer. Now, this is interesting because just a few years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court, well, I should say in 2014, the U.S. Supreme Court had a decision. The decision is called Grease v. Galloway. And the decision was, if a town meeting, in this case it was Grease, New York, okay, Grease, a city or town in New York State, if a town meeting opens and they have a minister to pray can the minister pray in the name of Jesus? And a majority of the Supreme Court said yes. And they cited our good mutual friend Bill Federer and his book, America's God and Country. And it was directly in reference to that mention, you know, you had about, you know, Samuel Adams, I'm no bigot, I can listen to a man. And the minister they called was Jacob Duché, the local minister of Christ Church Anglican Church. That's where George Washington worshiped, you know, when he was writing the Constitution, or he was the, you know, the president presiding over the process of the Constitution being written. That's where Betsy Ross went, and he managed to get her to make the American, for the prototype of the American flag, etc. So, I mean, once you start digging into this stuff, you realize, oh my goodness, the facts are overwhelmingly on the side of faith playing, Christian faith specifically, playing a huge role in the founding of America.
That's right. And those in the news, you know, they're showing a lack of tolerance for to not recognize, you know, these the viewpoint that we, in the facts, that God was central to the founding generation and what they did. And the if I'm remembering correctly, John Adams wrote Abigail about that Reverend Duché coming and speaking to them. And it just so happened that the day he came, the Book of Common Prayers reading that day was Psalm 35. And in that psalm, David uses the lion as a metaphor for his enemies. Well, what was the symbol that was on the crest for Great Britain? A lion. And I think that that seemed very fitting and providential to him, to them, because they were hearing a scripture using, you know, the lion as a metaphor for the enemy. And the enemy they were facing was Great Britain, whose image and symbol was a lion. And I think those kinds of things stood out to them. They saw, you know, affirmation in moving forward. And, you know, it wasn't like they had this big master plan for a planned community like we do now. They were living in chaos in some places. There wasn't government. The king had dissolved the Massachusetts legislature, and the governor of Virginia had done the same by the time you get to 1776. And so they were trying to put law and order back into their lives and create this new government separate from England. And, you know, that we've talked before about how ministers would compare the plight of Americans and King George III to Moses and the Israelites and Pharaoh. And that was included in many sermons of the era, because they had to wrestle through with this. This was not an easy thing for them to change, you know. And John Adams talked about how the real American Revolution was a change in people's hearts and minds of their sentiments and their religious sentiments, because he said, you know, we used to say God save the king, and now we're embracing we the people, because he said that they had been taught to pray for the king and the royal family, and now they were praying for the Continental Congress to lead them. And so they went through this shift, and, you know, not all of them did. The ones who didn't either just tolerated it, or they moved to England or Canada. And then more and more people got on the bandwagon as the war progressed, and it was difficult. But at the end, you know, we had freedom from England, which is what the whole goal was. And we started a new government that we celebrate this year.
Well, it's a great story. And it's interesting, too. Ben Franklin asked a question, or he said this for the ages. You know, I think this is a really great quote, where he was asked after the Constitution. So now we're jumping ahead to 1787. And a prominent woman in Philadelphia asked him, "What kind of government have you given us, Dr. Franklin?" "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." Jane Cook, how about a 20-second thought, you know, on that that quote itself? "A republic, madam, if you can keep it."
Well, you know, they knew that the love of country would have to be passed down from generation to generation, and that each generation would have a role in whether we kept that government, whether we kept, representation as our primary way, and whether we upheld those rights that we put in the Bill of Rights. And so, yes, Franklin was very wise, and he had these great quips, and certainly that's one of his more famous ones.
All right, janecook.com. Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you.